Today we look at white fragility. According to white author Robin DiAngelo, you have it, whether you do or not. And that's next. Welcome to Culture Shift, the Barry Ferris Show. We are living in an American culture that has shifted from tolerant to cancel culture, from decent to rude, from optimistic to cynical, and from relatively safe to increasingly violent. But it's not too late. I hope to equip you with a historical framework applied to current events so you can lead and get America back on track for good. Hey, welcome back to the Barry Ferris Show, Culture Shift, where we look unapologetically at truth and where the truth sets you free. Today, we talk about white fragility. Now, according to white author Robin DiAngelo, if you're white, you're a racist. You might say, no, I'm not. Then she says, you're fragile, unable to handle the reality of your racist heart. You might say, that's ridiculous. I have friends who are black. I have friends who are Asian. I actually have friends who are Hispanic. I've got friends all over. I never think of them condescendingly, and we treat each other respectfully. I'm not racist. She will say, you are racist because you are white in a white society. Your thinking has all been based on your whiteness. You might say, come on, Robin. I went to a high school where 50% were black. I had blacks in my home growing up. I love everybody. She'll say, it's impossible to grow up white and not be racist. You say, Robin, how can you judge my heart? She'll say, the fact you're arguing with me, or the fact you get angry or remain silent, or worse, get so upset that you walk away, that's proof that you are filled with white fragility and you have a deep-seated white supremacy mindset. So, that's how Robin DiAngelo, based on her self-proclaimed process detailed in her book, coaches you to suffer for your sin of white supremacy. But don't worry, your white fragility coach informs you that though you're morally stained, she counsels you to breathe so you can stay relaxed as you undergo this verbal abuse. White fragility is based on group versus individual guilt. The real definition is this. It's the phenomenon that occurs when white people become angry, defensive, or hostile when confronted with the idea that they are complicit in systemic racism. Robin's book has been widely read by the left. In fact, she says that her primary audience is the white person who considers himself to be liberal. The white liberal is, in fact, the most guilty of white fragility, according to her, because the typical white liberal doesn't understand how white society has failed to understand the structural nature of racism. So, Robin's come to the rescue, and she's coming to help you explore the history of the existing racial hierarchy, and she makes the case for why it's incumbent upon white people to accept their individual and collective responsibility for white supremacy. And her book seems to have had a real impact, at least on white liberals. You know, you probably saw thousands of whites kneeling during the protests in the summer of 2020. When you look at them, you go, what are they all doing out there? Well, if you go onto YouTube and actually listen, they were asking for forgiveness for their whiteness. In this silly demonstration of fake humility, the leaders of these demonstrations point to DiAngelo's book, White Fragility. She argues that racism is super deep, and in her view, all whites are racists. Did I mention that DiAngelo is white? Anyway, according to her, whiteness is not just a concept. It's a reality for all whites. You are guilty of whiteness if you are white. What's whiteness? Well, according to Robin DiAngelo, it's the belief system that upholds white supremacy, a belief system that you insist you don't have. Well, according to DiAngelo, you are white, so you have it, period, and it must be dismantled. So, there you have it. It's the collective job of whites to face their group guilt, and that's the foundation of her argument. Now, she doesn't believe that Judeo-Christian thought or Western classical thought is good. She does not agree that you are responsible for your own sin only. You are responsible for the sins of others. She does not believe you can accomplish things based on your effort and hard work only. You can only do that if the system is fixed. She opposes individualism. In fact, to make her case, she must crush individualism. So she ignores the individual accomplishments of countless blacks. For example, let's take Morgan Freeman, the famous actor. You know, he was born in 1937, and he had his obstacles, but he became an Academy Award-winning actor, and he earned a net worth of $250 million, but he doesn't make it into the top 20 most wealthy blacks. His view on how to handle racism is to quit talking about it and to treat each other equally. Let's listen to him here.
Black History Month, you find
ridiculous.
Why?
You're going to relegate my history to a month?
Oh, come on.
What do you do with yours? Which month is White History Month? Come on, tell me.
I'm Jewish.
Okay, which month is Jewish History Month?
There isn't one.
Oh, why not?
Yeah.
You want one?
No.
I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is American history.
How are we going to get rid of racism until...
Stop talking about it. I'm going to stop calling you a white man.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a black man. I know you as Mike Wallace. You know me as Morgan Freeman. You understand what I know this white guy named Mike Wallace. You know what I'm saying?
But that isn't how Robin DiAngelo sees things. She wants you thinking about skin color everywhere you go. She can't bring herself to examine and celebrate the source of the success of the Morgan Freemans of the world. Why? She believes the central part of the American ideology is flawed. She says the American idea of being able to pursue your own happiness is in error. And that's easy for white people to say, that they could achieve something on their own merits, she says, as they sit on top of the nation's economic and political power structures. But Robin ignores the whites who came from poverty and overcame obstacles to achieve economic or political power. There's just no nuance for Robin. She believes that society as a whole is based on white control and is institutionally racist. She doesn't acknowledge that those with a married mom and a dad in the home, regardless of race, do well. She says that being raised in a society like ours with our history leaves an indelible mark on white people, even those white progressives who believe they stand in opposition to it. Everyone is socialized by the conditions that surround them. And in the American context, those conditions have always placed white people in a superior position and black and brown people in an inferior position. Never mind the prosperous blacks who earn their success based on merit, according to Robin. Never mind the brown, East Asian, Indian, and Hispanic success who earned theirs. She just has no room for alternatives to her narrative. Never mind my own high school experience where there were 600 whites and 600 blacks. In her mind, it's not possible for young whites and blacks to have spent quality relational time together and treated each other equally by name, as Morgan Freeman argues, not by color. But if you think you stand in opposition to racism, DiAngelo says you have a mistaken belief that you are less racist than others who are actually racist. The fact that you get upset when she coaches you into suffering for racism just shows that you have white fragility because you just don't understand how much you benefit from institutional racism. So what is it that triggers white fragility? It's the unbearable emotional and mental burden of discovering that you have participated in the oppression of blacks. Now, when a white person's accused of racism, they often get upset. Who wants to be accused of being evil? She doesn't think that the reason you as a white person are getting upset has anything to do with the evidence that you can point to that defends that you have a non-racist heart. Nope. She just says that just proves that you can't handle the truth of how racist you are. That's how she puts it. Robin puts you in a box. Now, until she coached you on racism, you thought that racism was just a personal character flaw in some people. And you thought racism was just something vulgar, mean, and cruel done by rude, mean, and cruel people, usually involving explicit and open hostility toward people of a different color than yours. You always thought it was an individual thing. You thought that world history has shown that racism could be the evil expression by any color to any color. No, she redefines racism as an exclusively white problem and as a group collective thing. She says you have to get away from thinking in terms of personal responsibility. For Robin, racism is power. And since white people have controlled society and have wielded that collective power against those who don't have the power, that all of the whole social, political, cultural, economic, and legal structures of the United States are against blacks and for whites, that's not divisive, is it? So according to Robin, this is the case whether you believe it or not. And don't show her any evidence of black billionaires, multimillionaires, actors, media hosts, coaches, doctors, professors, CEOs, board members, executive vice presidents, Supreme Court justices, senators, congressmen, or mayors. Robin has no time for an honest discussion about fatherhood and how fathers abandoning their children is directly correlated to poverty. Regardless, Robin says that blacks who don't achieve feel that they are lesser individuals for the wrong reason. It's not for lack of having a father like black scholar Thomas Sowell would suggest. It's not for lack of hard work and initiative like black scholar Walter Williams would say. No, it's whiteness. The whole problem with whiteness is that whites think that individuals can achieve things on their own. So the American idea that regardless of color, you can achieve on your own merit is racist? In fact, D'Angelo says that if you believe in personal responsibility and individual attainment, it's impossible for you to acknowledge the structural power disparities within society. Robin does not explain how the great achievements of black businessmen, black athletes, or black actors, or black doctors, or black lawyers have pulled it off. So how can she argue this in the face of so much evidence to the contrary? You know that according to Forbes, there are 1.5 million black millionaires in the United States. Isn't that fantastic? I mean, that's in a population of 48 million blacks. Now, just for a comparison, there are 885 million blacks in the top 19 African countries. And in all those countries combined, there are only 121,000 millionaires. So those African countries have 18 times the population of blacks, but only 8% of the millionaires. So if you do a little math, in other words, 1 out of every 8,000 blacks are millionaires in the top 19 African countries, where 1 out of every 32 blacks in America are millionaires. You get into a small group in a church, and there's probably a millionaire in your small group. If you're watching the video, you can see the pictures and the net worth of a sampling of wealthy black Americans scrolling down the screen there. And you'll certainly know some of the famous actors and musicians and athletes who excelled in professional sports. But look at the sheer number of successful businessmen and businesswomen. It's staggering because we're only showing some of those that are worth over $300 million. But Robin DiAngelo doesn't seem to be interested in black success. She thinks only white people think individual achievement and merit are linked. Tell that to black Robert Smith, who enjoyed a childhood with a mother and a father in Denver. He was a persistent young man. And you know, when he was in high school, he called MIT each Monday for 5 months to try to get an internship, even though it's not supposed to be allowed unless you're in college. He not only got in, he got in and he developed a reliable test for semiconductors. And then he earned his degree in chemical engineering and an MBA from Columbia. He worked hard. He excelled at Goldman Sachs. And then he started his own private equity firm. And he now enjoys a net worth of $3.3 billion. I think he can afford just about anything. And I think he earned it. And I think he displayed a direct link between his hard work and his achievement. But Robin ignores the immense wealth of the black community who have lived the American dream. She insists that because white people believe they are unique individuals, they also come to believe that their view of the world is objective. So white people are the only ones who think of themselves as unique? And white people are the only ones who think they have autonomy over what they believe? You gotta be kidding. So white people are the only people who believe in objective truth? Well, what about all the blacks who believe in God, Christ, and the full inerrancy of the Bible? Those blacks believe in objective truth. They believe they are created in the image of God, and they can certainly belt out a great worship song to express that they believe they are unique, and they believe they have complete autonomy over what they believe. But Robin isn't interested in a balanced discussion. She just wants you feeling bad about yourself if you're a white person, period. And especially if you're white and you really believe that you're not racist. Whiteness is kind of vague from her perspective. According to her, it's a constellation of processes and practices of basic rights, values, beliefs, and perspectives and experiences that are presumed to be agreed by everyone, but in fact are just for white people. But D'Angelo is unwilling to let you pin her down. You are fragile if you are white and defend yourself as not racist. So is there any objective way to scientifically measure her claims? No. She refers to implicit bias to build some foundation for her claims. In fact, her whole theory of white fragility, if you're looking at it from any scientific perspective, depends on implicit bias. And the source of implicit bias derives from the implicit association test, the IAT. It was introduced in 1998 and was later promoted by Harvard. But after 23 years of tests, Jesse Singel demonstrates in his expansive, thoroughly researched article that the implicit association test is just not up to the job. It turns out that after extensive studies by esteemed psychologists that it does not measure people's propensity to commit real-world acts of implicit bias against marginalized groups. Top psychology journals have debunked it. It doesn't offer normal quality control standards that are expected of psychological instruments. Everybody just got on the bandwagon. But the conclusion is it's a noisy, unreliable measure. And get this, even the implicit association test's creators have now admitted that it's not reliable. That's right. The only objective way to prove implicit bias, which is the foundation of D'Angelo's entire theory, has been proven wrong. Implicit bias is pseudoscience. It's not real science. She assumes that all people have implicit bias that predicts their behavior and that most people don't even know they have it. But she does. And she'll coach you through it. But scientifically, implicit bias is not the same as unconscious bias. According to real scientific meta-analysis, implicit bias does not predict how people will act in real life. And this was a peer-reviewed study by 6 universities. The study's conclusion states, our findings suggest that changes in implicit measures are possible, but those changes do not necessarily translate into changes in explicit measures or behavior. In fact, the New York University scholar's white paper says it's a concept in pursuit of a measure. And I quote, there's little evidence to support the more provocative claim that people possess unconscious racist attitudes. So the foundation of D'Angelo's entire theory is flawed. She just made it up, and it has no support scientifically. But that doesn't keep her from scolding you about your white fragility. Robin ignores black success. She misses the historical truth that evil people from all colors have been racists, and those evil people have enslaved all colors, whites, Asians, blacks, Native Americans, etc. D'Angelo rejects the concept of a conservative black man who's a good father and does not blame the system. She completely overlooks the great strides in the United States from the end of the Civil War until the 1960s when the black family was largely intact. Denzel Washington, one of the best actors of all time, in my opinion, black, white, or brown. And in my view, he's really got spiritual authority to speak of being a good father. And that's because, by all appearances, from everything I can tell, he seems to have been an exceptional father. So what does Denzel Washington have to say about the issue of black crime? He says it starts in a fatherless home. If the father was around, the chances of the crime would diminish. Here he is answering the question of whether the system is to blame. He says the absence of the father is the critical problem. Here he is.
You blame the system? Where was his father? Yeah. It starts in the house. It starts in the home. And yeah, well, my father got locked up. Well, where was his father?
Yeah.
So Denzel Washington has lived it. But his comment is supported by the National Center for Education Statistics. If you have a father and a mother and you are black, you have a 93% chance of living above the poverty line. In spite of science and the evidence to the contrary, how does the white fragility movement gain so much momentum with such a condescending view of blacks? I mean, it's difficult to imagine, let's be honest, how one could get away with using the same phrase in relation to any other ethnic group in society. I mean, no one talks of black fragility or Chinese fragility or Hispanic fragility. So, Columbia linguistics professor John McWhorter, who happens to be black, reviewed D'Angelo's book in July of 2020. He calls it a racist tract and a prayer book for a cult. He goes on to say, the book diminishes black people in the name of dignifying us. And according to him, as a black professor, he says the book is pernicious. Here's his quote. D'Angelo's book is replete with claims that are either plain wrong or bizarrely disconnected from reality. For example, she depicts whites as always ignorant of themselves, and they need to be taught by experts like her of their whiteness. Yet, these same people remain somehow formally united in deliberately protecting their white supremacy. So Professor McWhorter asks the question, if these people don't even know whiteness is a category, just what are they now suddenly defending? So let's say that you object to Robin's views. She'd say you're engaging in a type of bullying that whose function is to obscure racism and protect white dominance and regain white equilibrium. That's a quote from her. So McWhorter says, that's a pretty strong charge to make against people who, according to D'Angelo, don't even conceive of their own whiteness. Now, for the proponents of white fragility, there's no redemption. If you're white, you can never really get to the other side. Even if you make it your lifelong effort, you will die a racist. You see, according to Robin, if you're white, you're an inner racist, trapped in a society where you exert racism just by getting out of bed. So you need to suffer. Columbia professor McWhorter says, the bigger problem with Robin's ridiculous book is how it presumes on black people. Here's a quote from the professor. Why do black people need to be treated the way D'Angelo assumes we do? The very assumption is deeply condescending to all proud black people. In my life, according to McWhorter, racism has affected me now and then at the margins, in very occasional social ways, but has had no effect on my access to societal resources. If anything, it's made them more available to me than they would have been otherwise. Nor should anyone dismiss me as a rara avis. Being middle class, upwardly mobile, and black has been quite common during my existence since the mid-1960s. He goes on and says, I neither need nor want anyone to muse on how they exercised white privilege over me. Nor do I need wider society to undergo teachings in how to be exquisitely sensitive about my feelings. I see no connection between D'Angelo's brand of re-education and vigorous constructive activism in the real world on issues of import to the black community. And I cannot imagine that any black readers could willingly submit themselves to D'Angelo's ideas while considering themselves adults of ordinary self-regard and strength. Few books about race have more openly infantilized black people than this supposedly authoritative tome. Well, I can't really say it any better than Professor McWhorter, so I'll let him close us out. D'Angelo's answer to white fragility, in other words, entails an elaborate and pitilessly dehumanizing condescension toward black people. The sad truth is that anyone falling under the sway of this blinkered, self-satisfied, punitive stunt of a primer has been taught by a tragically misguided pastor how to be a racist in a whole new way. You know, the Bible says that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. It's an individual thing when you sin. Racism is a sin, and it's a sin against a fellow human. But it's an individual sin, and that individual should be punished. Collective guilt is a fallacy. In fact, group guilt is a flawed foundation for a society, and it should be crushed. To your success, and that depends on your freedom.
Hi, I'm David Farah. Thank you for listening to my dad's podcast, The Barry Farah Show, Culture Shift. Click subscribe now to be sure you don't miss an episode. Share this podcast with your friends on social media and give The Barry Farah Show your 5-star rating. Check out today's show notes below this episode and at thebarryfarahshow.com. This podcast is also available in video format at The Barry Ferris Show on YouTube. See you next time.